Now, before I start today, I wanted to give a shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based out of Los Angeles. You might remember that she guest-hosted my podcast back in January and then came on live with me last summer in August of 2021. Jeannie facilitates breathwork to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Are you having trouble calming the monkey mind? Well, she knows all about that. It's not about controlling or managing your stress or your thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. Jeannie spent over 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. However, she healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. Are you looking to decrease stress, decrease negative self-talk, regulate your nervous system, and heal your TMS symptoms? Reach out to her on her website. It's www.jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com. She only has one spot left to work with her for this month, so sign up for a free 30-minute consult to get more info and see if you too would be a good fit. Again, go to JeannieKulwin.com to learn more. After a week off, welcome back to the podcast. It is Thursday, July the 14th. Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Let me first give a shout out to the patrons of the show. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, helping keep the lights on, pay for some of the fees associated with publishing, and a few bucks in the tip jar, it would be greatly appreciated. Go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. So let me start with Barb, Arnie, Brian, Julie, Ross, Christina, Anthony, Michael, Tony, Kelly, Irina, Mindy, Jason, John, James, Sylvie, Sasha, Dominic, Enda, Elise, Amanda, Paul, Brent, Emily, Patricia, and Kirk. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the show and helping keep it available and on the air. So I was out last week. Went camping. So basically, there's going to be a topic of this show is around my missing cat. It's been 3 weeks now. Actually, as I record this, this is day 20. So on this day, 3 weeks ago, was when she left the house at around 7 p.m. to go do her nightly stroll, which she does every single night in our cul-de-sac, and then hasn't returned. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, read a post that I made in the last couple of days on the Mind and Fitness Podcast Leaders of Pain group. And my intent was to record a podcast before I went camping last week, and then I just did not have the time. Pretty much every waking moment where I'm not working has been spent looking for this cat. And so I had my headphones with me, and I thought, hey, we're camping out by the river. Maybe I'll record a podcast here. Just didn't happen. So, just sort of ran out of time. So thanks for bearing with me. Let me read something to you. So I wrote this a couple of days ago because I've been completely silent on social media outside of, these lost pet and lost cat groups. It's been very tough to sort of bring myself to have really anything to say of substance really of any kind. So, here's what I wrote. This is on July 11th. I've been completely silent on social media since she disappeared, except for the lost pet pages in my area, because I felt as if posting anything was a signal that I had given up on finding her. I had this really wonderful conversation with someone a few hours ago about my attitude lately. I've been exceptionally angry, short-fused, lots of sarcastic comments, and not sleeping much, just generally not myself. Pet loss is a heck of a thing. Death is certainly one, and we experienced that less than 4 months ago with the sudden passing of our dog. But actual loss, where this member of the family has completely vanished without a trace, is really something else. Like as if she was wiped off the face of the earth, this one hurts especially bad, and I can't quite put my finger on it. Stella was about 24 hours from euthanasia in 2009 when I walked into the city shelter and adopted her. She was about eight months old, and was found on the side of the freeway a few weeks earlier. She had remained at the shelter unclaimed. I think a big reason this is so unsettling is that Stella represents the conduit to a former life. She's the last remnant of my life that the that my wife and I had before we had kids, before we moved into our current house, before we were even married. I was 23 when I adopted Stella, and I say the grief has been heavy is an understatement. I've been searching for 18 days, 20 days at this point. I've interviewed about 50 houses in the area while dropping out flyers. Four previous cat owners had cats killed by predators, and all of those cats were found within a day. There's an animal recovery expert in the area. His website indicates that in our area, predator attacks only account for about 3% of cat disappearances and deaths. Despite every unsolicited opinion of people who walk by while I'm hanging signs on telephone poles and tell me, hey, you know, there's coyotes that probably killed your cat. No shitting you. There's probably been five or six people that have stopped by and given me this weird, I don't even know if we even call it a warning on social media, and it's obnoxious. I haven't had the back pain or any other symptoms that tend to pop up when life events are happening, but the immeasurable anger is the current imperative. I miss my girl, and I miss what she represents in my life, and I can't keep that buried, which is totally true. So sort of the sequence of events, every evening around 7 p.m., Stella leaves the house. She goes on patrol for about an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours maybe, and then returns home, stays within our cul-de-sac. As I've walked around the different neighborhoods doing, interviewing people just to see if they've seen her, nobody has really seen her. There's actually been a couple of sightings on a street behind us, which has been a little weird, but it just seems like her territory for the most part is kept within our little 8-house cul-de-sac. And so basically I was gone all day on that Thursday. So as you're listening to this, 3 weeks ago today, I was out riding my motorcycle in the middle of the state with some buddies up in the forest. And I got home kind of late, and then I took a shower, and then I laid in bed, and my wife came in the room and said, I haven't seen Stella all day. And sort of did a very, very light search. And then when I woke up the next day, I did a much heavier search. And keep checking shelters. I've made 40 big, giant neon lost cat signs in the area. There's actually been a couple of people that have called me with potential sightings. One, I went and set a trap in their on their deck and ended up being a cat that looked like mine but was not mine. And then on Sunday, this past Sunday, somebody called me early in the morning and said they think that they saw our cat running across their fence. I went and set another trap. Had that trap there for two nights and caught a very large possum, but again, not my cat. So I'm hopeful. Again, when I went around and did all this interviewing and all this flyer dropping off to people, there was a handful of people who had their cats that were killed by predators in the past, but all of them found a body in a day or so, a day or less, I think, in actually all instances. So I haven't found anything. I haven't found a single hair. I haven't found a collar. I haven't found anything. And I've searched high and low. So I'm hopeful that she's still alive. I do think that she's still alive. It's just figuring out. I bought a book from a cat recovery expert. And one of the things that she keeps saying in her book is to try and think like a cat. So the next thing I think I'm going to try is tough to describe, but every house in our area has a crawl space. Very few have a basement, but most have a crawl space. And there's these vents that are used to seal the crawl spaces. And somebody had brought up potentially maybe one of these being unsealed. So I want to go and try and get permission to check the other 7 houses in the cul-de-sac and check and see is there maybe an unsealed crawl space or an open vent mesh that she can't get out of or that she's stuck. And it seems to be for cats that are indoor, outdoor, or have regular outdoor access, that most of the time what is occurring is that cat is stuck somewhere. So it could be in a tree, could be in a shed, could be in a garage, could be in a crawl space, could be under a house, but likely stuck somewhere. The next most likely outcome is that they've been chased out of their territory either by a bully cat or a dog or a predator of some kind, and now they're displaced. And at that point, it's tough because cats can just sort of wander and wander and wander. So I've been reading stories on Reddit and places like that of these cats that are gone for weeks or months. There was one that was a year, year and a half, and then eventually just returns home like nothing happened. So my only hope is that there's also a theory that kind of the third most likely is that somebody would have taken her in as if they're that she's her own or she is their own. She wears a collar with a bell on it, but there's not a tag on it. She is microchipped. So if somebody were to take her to a shelter or a vet or animal control or whatever, they would scan her and it would say that it belongs to us. And I would get a phone call and that would be that. So I'm hopeful that wherever she is, that is sort of the best case scenario on all of these, I think, is that somebody did take her in unknowingly and eventually they will go get her scanned and determine that she does belong to somebody just because she would be fed, she would be sheltered. But she's a hell of a survivor, and cats in general just kind of have these amazing survival instincts. She's caught birds, she's caught mice. There was no reason to believe that she was feeling really ill. She still was very spry for being a 13-year-old cat, able to jump up onto 6-foot, 8-foot fences, up onto the posts, no problem. So very athletic. And that's sort of why I just, it wasn't like she was an old cat that was, one guy had stopped by me when I was hanging signs and he said, you know, older cats, they leave their home and they go hide out somewhere to die. Which, again, like some of these people's advice, I don't know if they're thinking before they say this, but yeah, I do think pretty strongly that I think the reason that this riles me up so much is that she really does serve as sort of the conduit to the past life. She's the last remnant. She's the last surviving animal. Dickie died in 2019. Barkley died a few months ago. Got rid of our house. Lives somewhere else now. The only thing really, different cars, different careers, different jobs, different looks, like everything about us is different. We're married now. We weren't married when we got her. The only thing that hasn't changed and has been the constant is this cat. And I'm not a big, I don't have a great track history or track record of adapting to change very well. So we'll see. I told Zoe that we can't give up looking for her because she would never give up on us. And Zoe's been so sweet about it. I feel like she's withholding a lot of maybe the sadness that she's feeling because I think that she is just 100% sure that Stella's going to come home. And though I'm pretty sure that she's still alive, I'm like 90% sure that she's still alive. I'm probably only 70% sure that we'll get her back. Maybe 60% sure that we'll get her back, which is really, really sad. Her and Zoe are best friends. She sleeps with Zoe every single night. But Jenny was cleaning out Zoe's room over the weekend, kind of getting some stuff organized. Her birthday was recently, so she got a whole bunch of new toys. And there was a entry in a journal that Zoe made where it's a picture of a lost cat sign, and she's writing about how much she loves and misses her cat. And it wasn't that was not really expressed to us. We know that she misses her, but I think Zoe's maybe withholding a little bit, repressing a little bit. So just sort of, you know, letting her know that she doesn't have to bottle it in is kind of the intent or the goal with her. So hope Stella comes home. Nevertheless, I had posted when I knew there wasn't going to be a podcast, I posted in the Mind and Fitness Podcast, the Leaders of Pain group. Wow, that was 14 minutes rambling about a cat. Hopefully you don't hate cats if you're listening to this. But I had posted, hey, no podcast this week. I think this is only the second or third week I've missed in 4 years, which is true. But for next week, would love to do an Ask Me Anything kind of episode, anything that you would want my 2 cents on. So I got a few responses. I got 4 of them. So let's go through them here. This is from Daniel. Daniel says, hi, Eddie. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether to worry about new issues that keep coming up that would usually call for a doctor's appointment. What I mean is I'm having serious back problems at the moment, and there isn't a real reason for it. I've stayed away from doctors. I'd love to hear advice on whether doctor's appointments are required for every ailment before you treat it the TMS way. I don't think so. And I know, you know, the advice from Sarno and the advice in general is to make sure that you get things checked out if they seem really serious. But this is also one of those things where, look, if you're listening to this podcast, you are likely just somebody that feels you have feelings in your body and you're hyper attuned to them. God, I hate that word, hyper. You're very attuned to them. So probably the best thing to do would be to treat everything as TMS and give it a few weeks, but try to do everything you can to treat it as if it's TMS and not give it any more attention than that. Continue your regular activity. Continue not really paying attention to the symptoms themselves, but making sure that you are paying attention and being in tune with how it is that you're feeling, what's going on in your life, what are things you're trying not to think about, what are emotional experiences you're trying not to have, because that conflict is what you're probably experiencing. And I'd say that with near certainty. So it would be very hard to go to be checked out at the doctor for every single ailment. If you're in the United States, Daniel, it's incredibly hard to get a doctor, let alone a specialist appointment, at least where I'm at. Like, I called to make my annual in June, and I couldn't get in until November. So it's very hard to try and get an appointment with anybody. So hope that you're well, and maybe by the time you hear this, it's gone away. But that would be my advice. So this one comes from Rich. I've been struggling returning to running. Pain in my knee flares up even when I consider it. I do full workouts, including legs, lots of squats and lunges, with no pain as long as the form is solid. I've overcome so much TMS issues, but this keeps holding me back. Thanks for everything you do. It's very helpful. It keeps me pushing forward with fitness. Rich, I love to hear from fitness people that are doing this regularly. So my guess is that there's probably some kind of an expectation around pain. Thus, a little bit of conditioning probably is going on. So my guess, and I could be wrong, but my guess is that maybe you have had some kind of an injury or some kind of an experience in the past where you had an injury, you were running prior to it, and so now you might be associating the two. If you can do squats and lunges, I actually think that lunges are maybe harder on the knee than running would be. Just my experience in doing about a bazillion lunges in my life and probably like two bazillion squats in my life. I think that lunges are probably harder on the knee than running is. And I think that squats, I think actually squats are great for the knee. But and regardless, like whatever the exercise is, your body is, I mean, it's a vehicle that should be able to get you 400 or 500,000 miles out of it, which would be a long, long time. So consider that. If you can think back to any sort of a time where you've had a knee injury, was there running around that time? And if there was, I think there's a true, like a real expectation of pain occurring because you're running, and it's probably just very under the surface. So that's something that I would consider. And like with the advice I gave to the person just before, is there anything that you're trying to stuff down or not think about right now? Because that might be a good way to guide you. This is from Linda. I've been listening to your podcast for about 6 months, and I find them informative, and I find your voice soothing. Oh, thanks, Linda. When I'm busy doing something that makes me happy, I am preoccupied and my pain feels like it is gone. When I stop the activity, I'm right back at square one. Can it be that I'm just fooling myself and what I'm doing is just ignoring the pain when I'm involved in pleasant activities? So I've talked about this example before. I would have this phenomenon. When I was in the throes of pain and I was still working out, there was a good chunk of time where I would have pain before workouts and after workouts, but during workouts, I would not have pain and I could do my normal activity. And I would try and justify this or figure out maybe a potential reason why this could be, because that just, it doesn't really make any sense. And I remember a I don't know if it was a physical therapist or a chiropractor or a voodoo master or something like that. Somebody had sort of floated the thought or the notion to me that, hey, maybe it's possible that the your fascia is warm when you're working out or when you're doing activity. And so it's stretched and you're pliable and all this kind of stuff. And then when you stop, it goes away. That is absurd. So don't believe that. That's insane. I think what's going on is that you are preoccupied. It's not necessarily fooling yourself and ignoring pain, but more so what it is that you're engaged. You're engaged with something. I think this is why in Steve Ozanich's book, he talks so much about a necessity around the arts, like doing the arts as a part of recovery. And the arts can mean a lot of different things. It could be painting. It could be piano. It could be other types of music. It could be podcasting. I actually find adventure motorcycle riding and skateboarding somewhat arty because they do really grab and focus your attention and they do calm you down for some people. For some people, they speed you up, but for me, they calm me down. So that's what I think is going on. You're engaging with activities that you enjoy or you find fun. That's why we say like back to maximum physical activity for people, but it's got to be something that you enjoy, because otherwise you're going to hate it and your mind is not going to be into it, and it's going to be into thinking about all the different pains and stuff that you have. So I think what the issue is that when you're preoccupied with something, you're having a good time, thus you're not focusing on the pain. So yes, it's distracting yourself, but it's not really ignoring the pain, because the pain is something that's being generated by the mind, and your mind is busy and occupied by something if you're not feeling it while you're doing an activity. From Pamela, how do I stop the pain habit? I expect the pain to spike at the end of the day, and it does, of course. Total expectation. Dr. Schubiner wrote Unlearn Your Pain. That might be a way to go in there, because it is a process of unlearning and unwinding the pain and the symptoms and the issues and such that you're having. So keep that in mind. Being able to just know that with neuroplasticity and all that, it sounds very technical, but all that really is unlearning the different habits that we've learned. It's tough to unlearn how to ride a bike. It's tough to unlearn how to drive a car. But you can unlearn this. And I think it's being able to engage, like Linda said, engage in activities that you enjoy and that bring you joy and can help take away and mitigate some of your attention and put it elsewhere, I think would be something good for you. Let's see here. Pamela also had a post on the page that I'm going to go through. I haven't read it yet. So for those who have successfully navigated this journey, did you find it worked better to continue with some low-level physical activity during a setback or flare to teach your brain that movement was safe, or did you just pretty much stop physical activity until you felt safe to start again? So I've gone both ways on this, and I've talked about this on the podcast before. Cord is wrapped around my foot. I had a horrific relapse about a year and change ago. My lower back seized up so bad that I fell to the floor and I could not move my legs. And I immediately believed that it was TMS wholeheartedly, even though that was really scary. And if that would have happened to me a few years earlier, I definitely would have been calling 911 because I couldn't walk. So I army crawled, not being able to use my legs, to my phone, messaged my buddy Brad. He talked me through it and, you know, told me to what's going on in my life, how do I feel, that kind of stuff. And I just thought of it as TMS and didn't really pay much more attention to it other than that. So I didn't do anything physical to try and overcome, quote unquote, what was going on. And I was back to working out in a day or two. And I had a planned rest day the next day anyway. So I had I took my planned rest day, but then I was doing full activity a couple days after that. And then within a week later, I was back to snatching 185 pounds or 190 pounds or whatever. So I really paid no attention to that. The same thing happened at the very beginning of March of this year. Same feeling, same spasm, same location, everything like that. And for some reason, I did pay more attention to it. And I think maybe the reason is that it did not happen while I was engaging in any physical activity, versus a year prior, it was doing a deadlift or a snatch pull or snatch deadlift. And it was like a hot knife shot me in the back. And so I, for some reason, was just not fooled. This past time, I wasn't really doing anything that should have caused a problem like that. I was doing some mobility exercises, but for whatever reason in my head, I got it stuck that I had done this twisting, and went to the physical therapist, you know, did rehab stuff, all that kind of thing, and did lay off it for a while. Wasn't lifting heavy, that kind of thing. And that took a long time to get over. That took a month and a half to get over, 2 months to get over, something like that. It took a long time. So my best advice would be, it doesn't even need to be low-level physical activity, but doing something that really pushes the boundaries and pushes the limits of the symptoms that you're feeling is what I would say. So hope this was good for everybody. I've got an interview coming up this Friday that I'm doing. I've got one in the can, so you'll get some interview stuff soon. Think about Stella. Send some thoughts my way. And if you have any great cat recovery stories, please send them my way. I made a post in the cats subreddit on Reddit asking people for incredible stories of cats returning. And this lady wrote this amazing story about her cat coming home after 3 months. And it was the bitter cold, snowy time of year. And her cat showed up a couple pounds lighter, but was fine outside of that. So that's what I need to happen. I would love to get a few more years with our sweet Stella Bella. And Zoe's gone at overnight camp this week. And it'd be even cooler to have her come home to her cat, her favorite, her best friend in the world. So thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of the week.